Neuromancer by William Gibson, continued. Cassette 5, side 1. You were right, Dix. There's some kind of manual override on the hardwiring that keeps Wintermute under control. However much he is under control, he added. He, the construct said. He. What's that? It. I keep telling you. It's a code, a word, he said. Somebody has to speak it into a fancy terminal in a certain room while we take care of whatever's waiting for us behind that ice. Well, you got time to kill, kid, the flatline said. Old Quang's slow but steady. Case jacked out. Into Malcolm's stare. You dead a while there, man. It happens, he said. I'm getting used to it. You dealing with the darkness, man. Only game in town, it looks like. Jah love, Case, Malcolm said, and turned back to his radio module. Case stared at the matted dreadlocks, the ropes of muscle around the man's dark arms. He jacked back in and flipped. Molly was trotting along a length of corridor that might have been the one she'd traveled before. The glass-fronted cases were gone now, and Case decided they were moving toward the tip of the spindle. Gravity was growing weaker. Soon she was bounding smoothly over rolling hillocks of carpets, faint twinges in her leg. The corridor narrowed suddenly, curved, split. She turned right and started up a freakishly steep flight of stairs, her leg beginning to ache. Overhead, strapped and bundled cables hugged the stairwell's ceiling like color-coded ganglia. The walls were splotched with damp. She arrived at a triangular landing and stood, rubbing her leg. More corridors, narrow, their walls hung with rugs. They branched away in three directions. Left. She shrugged. Let me look around, okay? Left. Relax, there's time. She started down the corridor that led off to her right. Stop. Go back. Danger. She hesitated. From the half-open oak door at the far end of the passage came a voice, loud and slurred, like the voice of a drunk. Case thought the language might be French, but it was too indistinct. Molly took a step, another, her hand sliding into the suit to touch the butt of her Fletcher. When she stepped into the neural disruptor's field, her ears rang, a tiny rising tone that made Case think of the sound of her Fletcher. She pitched forward, her striated muscles slack, and struck the door with her forehead. She twisted and lay on her back, her eyes unfocused, breath gone. "What's this?" said the slurred voice. "Fancy dress?" A trembling hand entered the front of her suit and found the Fletcher, tugging it out. "Come visit, child, now." She got up slowly, her eyes fixed on the muzzle of a black automatic pistol. The man's hand was steady enough now. The gun's barrel seemed to be attached to her throat with a taut, invisible string. He was old, very tall, and his features reminded Case of the girl he had glimpsed in the 20th siècle. He wore a heavy robe of maroon silk, quilted around the long cuffs and shawl collar. One foot was bare, the other in a black velvet slipper with an embroidered gold fox head over the instep. He motioned her into the room. "Slow, darling." The room was very large, cluttered with an assortment of things that made no sense to Case. He saw a gray steel rack of old-fashioned Sony monitors, a wide brass bed heaped with sheepskins, with pillows that seemed to have been made from the kind of rug used to pave the corridors. Molly's eyes darted from a huge Telefunken entertainment console to shelves of antique disc recordings, their crumbling spines cased in clear plastic, to a wide work table littered with slabs of silicon. Case registered the cyberspace deck and the trodes, but her glance slid over it without pausing. "It would be customary," the old man said, "for me to kill you now." Case felt her tense, ready for a move. "But tonight I indulge myself. What is your name?"
"Molly."
"Molly. Mine is Ashpool." He sank back into the creased softness of a huge leather armchair with square chrome legs, but the gun never wavered. He put her Fletcher on a brass table beside the chair, knocking over a plastic vial of red pills. The table was thick with vials, bottles of liquor, soft plastic envelopes spilling white powders. Case noticed an old-fashioned glass hypodermic and a plain steel spoon. "How do you cry, Molly? I see your eyes are walled away. I'm curious." His eyes were red-rimmed, his forehead gleaming with sweat. He was very pale. Sick, Case decided, or drugs. "I don't cry much." "But how would you cry if someone made you cry?" "I spit," she said. "The ducts are routed back into my mouth." "Then you've already learned an important lesson for one so young." He rested the hand with the pistol on his knee and took a bottle from the table beside him, without bothering to choose from the half-dozen different liquors. He drank brandy. A trickle of the stuff ran from the corner of his mouth. "That is the way to handle tears." He drank again. "I'm busy tonight, Molly. I built all this, and now I'm busy. Dying." "I could go out the way I came," she said. He laughed, a harsh, high sound. "You intrude on my suicide and then ask to simply walk out? Really, you amaze me. A thief." "It's my ass, boss, and it's all I got. I just want to get it out of here in one piece." "You are a very rude girl. Suicides here are conducted with a degree of decorum. That's what I'm doing, you understand? But perhaps I'll take you with me tonight, down to hell. It would be very Egyptian of me." He drank again. "Come here, then." He held out the bottle, his hand shaking. "Drink." She shook her head. "It isn't poisoned," he said, but returned the brandy to the table. "Sit. Sit on the floor. We'll talk." "What about?" She sat. Case felt the blades move very slightly beneath her nails. "Whatever comes to mind. My mind. It's my party. The cores woke me. 20 hours ago, something was afoot, they said, and I was needed. Were you the something, Molly? Surely they didn't need me to handle you, no. Something else. But I'd been dreaming, you see, for 30 years. You weren't born when last I lay me down to sleep. They told us we wouldn't dream in that cold. They told us we'd never feel cold either. Madness, Molly. Lies. Of course I dreamed. The cold let the outside in. That was it. The outside. All the night I built this to hide us from. Just a drop at first. One grain of night seeping in, drawn by the cold. Others following it, filling my head the way rain fills an empty pool. Calla lilies. I remember. The pools were terracotta, nursemaids, all of chrome. How the limbs went winking through the gardens at sunset. I'm old, Molly. Over 200 years, if you count the cold. The cold. The barrel of the pistol snapped up suddenly, quivering. The tendons in her thighs were drawn tight as wires now. You can get freezer burn, she said carefully. Nothing burns there, he said impatiently, lowering the gun. His few movements were increasingly sclerotic. His head nodded. It cost him an effort to stop it. Nothing burns. I remember now. The cores told me our intelligences are mad, and all the billions we paid so long ago, when artificial intelligences were rather a racy concept. I told the cores I'd deal with it. Bad timing, really, with 8-Jean down in Melbourne and only our sweet 3-Jane minding the store. Or very good timing, perhaps. Would you know, Molly? The gun rose again. There are some odd things afoot now in the Villa Straylight. Boss, she asked him, you know Wintermute? A name, yes. To conjure with, perhaps. A lord of hell, surely. In my time, dear Molly, I have known many lords, and not a few ladies. Why, a Queen of Spain once, in that very bed. But I wander. He coughed wetly, the muzzle of the pistol jerking as he convulsed. He spat on the carpet near his one bare foot. How I do wander, through the cold, but soon no more. I'd ordered a Jane thawed when I woke. Strange, to lie every few decades with what legally amounts to one's own daughter. His gaze swept past her to the rack of blank monitors. He seemed to shiver. "Marie-France's eyes," he said faintly and smiled. "We caused the brain to become allergic to certain of its own neurotransmitters, resulting in a peculiarly pliable imitation of autism." His head swayed sideways, recovered. "I understand that the effect is now more easily obtained with an embedded microchip." The pistol slid from his fingers, bounced on the carpet. "The dreams grow like slow ice," he said. His face was tinged with blue. His head sank back into the waiting leather, and he began to snore. Up, she snatched the gun. She stalked the room, Ashpool's automatic in her hand. A vast quilt or comforter was heaped beside the bed in a broad puddle of congealed blood, thick and shiny on the patterned rugs. Twitching a corner of the quilt back, she found the body of a girl, white shoulder blades slick with blood. Her throat had been slit. The triangular blade of some sort of scraper glinted in the dark pool beside her. Molly knelt, careful to avoid the blood, and turned the dead girl's face to the light, the face Case had seen in the restaurant. There was a click deep at the very center of things, and the world was frozen. Molly's SimStim broadcast had become a still frame, her fingers on the girl's cheek. The freeze held for 3 seconds, and then the dead face was altered, became the face of Linda Lee. Another click, and the room blurred. Molly was standing, looking down at a golden laser disc beside a small console on the marble top of a bedside table. A length of fiber-optic ribbon ran like a leash from the console to a socket at the base of the slender neck. "I got your number, fucker," Case said, feeling his own lips moving somewhere far away. He knew that Wintermute had altered the broadcast. Molly hadn't seen the dead girl's face swirl like smoke to take on the outline of Linda's death mask. Molly turned. She crossed the room to Ashpool's chair. The man's breathing was slow and ragged. She peered at the litter of drugs and alcohol. She put his pistol down, picked up her Fletcher, dialed the barrel over to single shot, and very carefully put a toxin dart through the center of his closed left eyelid. He jerked once, breath halting in mid-intake. His other eye, brown and fathomless, opened slowly. It was still open when she turned and left the room. Chapter 16. "Got your boss on hold," the flatline said. "He's coming through on the twin Hosaka in that boat upstairs, the one that's riding us piggyback, called the Haniwa." "I know," Case said absently. "I saw it." A lozenge of white light clicked into place in front of him, hiding the Tessier Ashpool ice. It showed him the calm, perfectly focused, utterly crazy face of Armitage, his eyes blank as buttons. Armitage blinked, stared. "Guess Wintermute took care of your Turings, too, huh?" "Like he took care of mine," Case said. Armitage stared. Case resisted the sudden urge to look away, drop his gaze. "You okay, Armitage?" "Case." And for an instant, something seemed to move behind the blue stare. "You've seen Wintermute, haven't you? In the Matrix?" Case nodded. A camera on the face of his Hosaka in Marcus Garvey would relay the gesture to the Haniwa monitor. He imagined Malcolm listening to his tranced half-conversations, unable to hear the voices of the construct or Armitage. "Case?" And the eyes grew larger, Armitage leaning toward his computer. "What is he, when you see him?" "A high-res SimStim construct."
"But who?"
"Finn, last time. Before that, this pimp I..."
"Not General Gerling?"
"General who?" The lozenge went blank.
"Run that back and get the Hosaka to look it up," he told the construct.
He flipped. The perspective startled him. Molly was crouching between steel girders, 20 meters above a broad, stained floor of polished concrete. The room was a hangar or service bay. He could see 3 spacecraft, none larger than Garvey, and all in various stages of repair. Japanese voices.
A figure in an orange jumpsuit stepped from a gap in the hull of a bulbous construction vehicle and stood beside one of the thing's piston-driven, weirdly anthropomorphic arms. The man punched something into a portable console and scratched his ribs. A cart-like red drone rolled into sight on gray balloon tires. "Case," flashed her chip. "Hey," she said, "waiting for a guide." She settled back on her haunches, the arms and knees of her modern suit, the color of the blue-gray paint on the girders. Her leg hurt, a sharp, steady pain now. "I should have gone back to Chin," she muttered. Something came ticking quietly out of the shadows, on a level with her left shoulder. It paused, swayed its spherical body from side to side on high-arched spider legs, fired a microsecond burst of diffuse laser light, and froze. It was a Braun microdrone, and Case had once owned the same model, a pointless accessory he'd obtained as part of a package deal with a Cleveland hardware fence. It looked like a stylized matte black Daddy Long Legs. A red LED began to pulse at the sphere's equator. Its body was no larger than a baseball. "Okay," she said. "I hear you." She stood up, favoring her left leg, and watched the little drone reverse. It picked its methodical way back across its girder and into darkness. She turned and looked back at the service area. The man in the orange jumpsuit was sealing in the front of a white vacuum rig. She watched him ring and seal the helmet, pick up his console, and step back through the gap in the construction boat's hull. There was a rising whine of motors, and the thing slid smoothly out of sight on a 10-meter circle of flooring that sank away into a harsh glare of arc lamps. The red drone waited patiently at the edge of the hole left by the elevator panel. Then she was off after the Braun, threading her way between a forest of welded steel struts. The Braun winked its LED steadily, beckoning her on. "How you doing, Case? You back in Garvey with Malcolm?" "Sure, and jacked into this. I like it, you know. Like I've always talked to myself in my head when I've been in tight spots. Pretend I got some friend, somebody I can trust, and I'll tell them what I really think, what I feel like, and then I'll pretend they're telling me what they think about that, and I'll just go along that way. Having you in is kind of like that. That scene with Ashpool." She gnawed at her lower lip, swinging around a strut, keeping the drone in sight. "I was expecting something maybe a little less gone, you know? I mean, these guys are all batshit in here, like they got luminous messages scrawled across the inside of their foreheads or something. I don't like the way it looks. I don't like the way it smells." The drone was hoisting itself up a nearly invisible ladder of U-shaped steel rungs toward a narrow, dark opening. "And while I'm feeling confessional, baby, I gotta admit, maybe I never much expected to make it out of this one anyway. Been on this bad roll for a while, and you're the only good change come down since I signed on with Armitage." She looked up at the black circle. The drone's LED winked, climbing. "Not that you're all that shit hot." She smiled, but it was gone too quickly, and she gritted her teeth at the stabbing pain in her leg as she began to climb. The ladder continued up through a metal tube barely wide enough for her shoulders. She was climbing up out of gravity toward the weightless axis. Her chip pulsed the time. 4:23:04. It had been a long day. The clarity of her sensorium cut the bite of the beta-phenethylamine, but Case could still feel it. He preferred the pain in her leg. "Case. 0000. 0000000000. 0000000000. "Guess it's for you," she said, climbing mechanically. The zeros strobed again, and a message stuttered there in the corner of her vision, chopped up by the display circuit. "General Gerling trained Corto for Screaming Fist and sold his ass to the Pentagon. W/Mute's primary grip on Armitage is a construct of Gerling. W/Mute says A's mention of G means he's cracking. Watch your ass. Dixie." "Well," she said, pausing, taking all of her weight on her right leg, "guess you got problems too." She looked down. There was a faint circle of light, no larger than the brass round of the Chubb key that dangled between her breasts. She looked up. Nothing at all. She tongued her amps, and the tube rose into vanishing perspective, the brawn picking its way up the rungs. "Nobody told me about this part," she said. Case jacked out.
"Malcolm. Man, you bossman gone very strange."
The Zionite was wearing a blue Sanyo vacuum suit, 20 years older than the one Case had rented in Freeside, its helmet under his arm, and his dreadlocks bagged in a net cap crocheted from purple cotton yarn. His eyes were slitted with ganja and tension.
"Keep calling down here with orders, man, but be some Babylon war."
Malcolm shook his head.
"Errol and I talking, and Errol talking with Zion. Founders say cut and run."
He ran the back of a large brown hand across his mouth. "Armitage?" Case winced as the beta-phenethylamine hangover hit him with its full intensity, unscreened by the Matrix or Simstim. "Brain's got no nerves in it," he told himself. "It can't really feel this bad."
"What do you mean, man? He's giving you orders?"
"What?"
"Man, Armitage, he telling me set course for Finland, you know? He telling me there be hope, you know? Come on my screen with this shirt all blood, man, and be crazy as some dog, talking screaming fists and rushing, and the blood of the betrayers shall be on our hands."
He shook his head again, the dread cap swaying and bobbing in zero-G, his lips narrowed.
"Founders say the mute voice be false prophet, surely, and Errol and I must abandon Marcus Garvey and return."
"Armitage? He was wounded? Blood?"
"Can't say, you know, but blood and stone crazy, Case."
"Okay," Case said. "So what about me? You're going home. What about me, Malcolm?"
"Man," Malcolm said, "you coming with me. I and I'm Zion with Errol, Babylon Rocker. Leave Mr. Armitage to talk with Ghost Cassette. One ghost to another."
Case glanced over his shoulder. His rented suit swung against the hammock where he'd snapped it, swaying in the air current from the old Russian scrubber. He closed his eyes. He saw the sacks of toxin dissolving in his arteries. He saw Molly hauling herself up the endless steel rungs. He opened his eyes.
"I don't know, man," he said, a strange taste in his mouth.
He looked down at his desk, at his hands.
"I don't know."
He looked back up. The brown face was calm now, intent. Malcolm's chin was hidden by the high helmet ring of his old blue suit.
"She's inside," he said. "Molly's inside. In Straylight, it's called. If there's any Babylon, man, that's it. We leave on her, she ain't coming out, steppin' razor or not."
Malcolm nodded, the dread bag bobbing behind him like a captive balloon of crocheted cotton.
"She you woman, Case?"
"I don't know. Nobody's woman, maybe." He shrugged and found his anger again, real as a shard of hot rock beneath his ribs.
"Fuck this," he said. "Fuck Armitage. Fuck Wintermute, and fuck you. I'm staying right here."
Malcolm's smile spread across his face like light breaking.
"Malcolm a rude boy, Case. Garvey Malcolm boat."
His gloved hand slapped a panel, and the bass-heavy rock-steady of Zion Dub came pulsing from the tug's speakers.
"Malcolm not running, no. I talk with Errol. He's certain to see it in similar light."
Case stared. "I don't understand you guys at all," he said.
"Don't stand you, man," the Zionite said, nodding to the beat. "But we must move by Jah love, each one."
Case jacked in and flipped for the Matrix.
"Get my wire?"
"Yeah." He saw that the Chinese program had grown. Delicate arches of shifting polychrome were nearing the TA ice.
"Well, it's getting stickier," the flatline said. "Your boss wiped the bank on that other Hosaka and damn near took ours with it. But your pal Wintermute put me onto something there before it went black. The reason Straylight's not exactly hopping with Tessia Ashpools is that they're mostly in cold sleep. There's a law firm in London keeps track of their powers of attorney. Has to know who's awake and exactly when. Armitage was routing the transmissions from London to Straylight through the Hosaka on the yacht. Incidentally, they know the old man's dead."
"Who knows?
The law firm and TA?
He had a medical remote planted in his sternum. Not that your girl's dart would have left a resurrection crew with much to work with. Shellfish toxin. But the only TA awake in Straylight right now is Lady 3 Jane Marie France. There's a male, a couple years older, in Australia on business. You ask me, I bet Wintermute found a way to cause that business to need this 8 Jean's personal attention. But he's on his way home, or near as it matters. The London lawyers give his Straylight ETA as 9 tonight. We slotted Quang Virus at 2:32:03. It's 4:45:20. Best estimate for Quang penetration of the TA core is 8:30, or a hair on either side. I figure Wintermute's got something going with this 3 Jane, or else she's just as crazy as her old man was. But the boy up from Melbourne will know the score. The Straylight security system keeps trying to go full alert, but Wintermute blocks him. Don't ask me how. Couldn't override the basic gate program to get Molly in, though. Armitage had a record of all that on his Osaka. Riviera must have talked 3 Jane into doing it. She's been able to fiddle entrances and exits for years. Looks to me like one of TA's main problems is that every family bigwig has riddled the banks with all kinds of private scams and exceptions. Kind of like your immune system falling apart on you, ripe for virus. Looks good for us once we're past that ice. Okay, but Wintermute said that arm... A white lozenge snapped into position, filled with a close-up of mad blue eyes. Case could only stare. Colonel Willie Corto, Special Forces, Strike Force Screaming Fist, had found his way back. The image was dim, jerky, badly focused. Corto was using the Haniwa's navigation deck to link with the Hosaka and Marcus Garvey. Case, I need the damage reports on Omaha Thunder. Say, I... Colonel? Hang in there, boy. Remember your training. But where have you been, man? He silently asked the anguished eyes. Wintermute had built something called Armitage into a catatonic fortress named Corto, had convinced Corto that Armitage was the real thing, and Armitage had walked, talked, schemed, bartered data for capital, fronted for Wintermute in that room in the Chiba Hilton. And now Armitage was gone, blown away by the winds of Corto's madness. But where had Corto been those years? Falling, burned and blinded, out of a Siberian sky. Case, this will be difficult for you to accept, I know that. You're an officer. The training. I understand. But Case, as God is my witness, we have been betrayed. Tears started from the blue eyes. Colonel, who? Who's betrayed us? General Girling, Case. You may know him by a code name. You do know the man of whom I speak. Yeah, Case said as the tears continued to flow. I guess I do, sir, he added on impulse. But, sir, Colonel, what exactly should we do? Now, I mean. Our duty at this point, Case, lies in flight, escape, evasion. We can make the Finnish border, nightfall tomorrow. Treetop flying on manual. See to the pants, boy, but that will only be the beginning. The blue eyes slitted above tanned cheekbones, slick with tears. Only the beginning. Betrayal from above. From above. He stepped back from the camera, dark stains on his torn twill shirt. Armitage's face had been mask-like, impassive, but Corto's was the true schizoid mask, illness etched deep in involuntary muscle, distorting the expensive surgery. Colonel, I hear you, man. Listen, Colonel, okay? I want you to open the, shit, what's it called, Dix? The mid-bay lock, the flatline said. Open the mid-bay lock. Just tell your central console there to open it, right? We'll be up there with you fast, Colonel. Then we can talk about getting out of here. The lozenge vanished. Boy, I think you just lost me there, the flatline said. The toxins, Case said. The fucking toxins. And jacked out. Poison? Malcolm watched over the scratched blue shoulder of his old Sanyo as Case struggled out of the G-web. And get this goddamn thing off me. Tugging at the Texas catheter. Like a slow poison, and that asshole upstairs knows how to counter it. And now he's crazier than a shithouse rat. He fumbled with the front of the Red Sanyo, forgetting how to work the seals.
Boss man, he poison you?
Malcolm scratched his cheek.
Got a medical kit, you know.
Malcolm, Christ, help me with this goddamn suit. The Zionite kicked off from the pink pilot module.
Easy, man. Measure twice, cut once, wise man put it. We get up there.
There was air in the corrugated gangway that led from Marcus Garvey's aft lock to the midbay lock of the yacht called Haniwa, but they kept their suits sealed. Malcolm executed the passage with balletic grace, only pausing to help Case, who'd gone into an awkward tumble as he'd stepped out of Garvey. The white plastic sides of the tube filtered the raw sunlight. There were no shadows. Garvey's airlock hatch was patched and pitted, decorated with a laser-carved Lion of Zion. Haniwa's mid-bay hatch was creamy gray, blank and pristine. Malcolm inserted his gloved hand in a narrow recess. Case saw his fingers move. Red LEDs came to life in the recess, counting down from 50. Malcolm withdrew his hand. Case, with one glove braced against the hatch, felt the vibration of the lock mechanism through his suit and bones. The round segment of gray hull began to withdraw into the side of Haniwa. Malcolm grabbed the recess with one hand and Case with the other. The lock took them with it. Haniwa was a product of the Dornier Fujitsu Yards, her interior informed by a design philosophy similar to the one that had produced the Mercedes that had chauffeured them through Istanbul. The narrow midbay was walled in imitation ebony veneer and floored with gray Italian tiles. Case felt as though he were invading some rich man's private spa by way of the shower. The yacht, which had been assembled in orbit, had never been intended for re-entry. Her smooth, wasp-like line was simply styling, and everything about her interior was calculated to add to the overall impression of speed. When Malcolm removed his battered helmet, Case followed his lead. They hung there in the lock, breathing air that smelled faintly of pine. Under it, a disturbing edge of burning insulation. Malcolm sniffed.
Trouble here, man. Any boat you smell that?
A door, padded with dark gray ultra suede, slid smoothly back into its housing. Malcolm kicked off the ebony wall and sailed neatly through the narrow opening, twisting his broad shoulders at the last possible instant for clearance. Case followed him clumsily, hand over hand, along a waist-high padded rail.
Bridge, Malcolm said, pointing down a seamless, cream-walled corridor. Be there.
He launched himself with another effortless kick. From somewhere ahead, Case made out the familiar chatter of a printer turning out hard copy. It grew louder as he followed Malcolm through another doorway into a swirling mass of tangled printout. Case snatched a length of twisted paper and glanced at it.
0000000000 0000000000 0000000000 Systems crash?
The Zionite flicked a gloved finger at the column of zeros.
No, Case said, grabbing for his drifting helmet.
The flatline said Armitage wiped the Hosaka he had in there.
Smell like he wipe 'em with laser, you know.
The Zionite braced his foot against the white cage of a Swiss exercise machine and shot through the floating maze of paper, batting it away from his face.
Case, man.
The man was small, Japanese, his throat bound to the back of the narrow, articulated chair with a length of some sort of fine steel wire. The wire was invisible, where it crossed the black temper foam of the headrest, and it had cut as deeply into his larynx. A single sphere of dark blood had congealed there like some strange, precious stone, a red-black pearl. Case saw the crude wooden handles that drifted at either end of the garrote, like worn sections of broom handle.
Wonder how long he had that on him, Case said, remembering Corto's post-war pilgrimage. He know how pilot boat, Case, boss man?
Maybe. He was special forces.
Well, this Japan boy, he not be pilotin'. Doubt I pilot her easy myself. Ver new boat.
So find us the bridge. Malcolm frowned, rolled backward, and kicked. Case followed him into a larger space, a kind of lounge, shredding and crumpling the lengths of printout that snared him in his passage.
There were more of the articulated chairs here, something that resembled a bar, and the Hosaka. The printer, still spewing its flimsy tongue of paper, was an inbuilt bulkhead unit, a neat slot in a panel of hand-rubbed veneer. He pulled himself over the circle of chairs and reached it, punching a white stud to the left of the slot. The chattering stopped. He turned and stared at the Hosaka. Its face had been drilled through at least a dozen times. The holes were small, circular, edges blackened. Tiny spheres of bright alloy were orbiting the dead computer.
"Good guess," he said to Malcolm.
"Bridge locked, man," Malcolm said from the opposite side of the lounge. The lights dimmed, surged, dimmed again. Case ripped the printout from its slot. More zeros.
Wintermute?
He looked around the beige and brown lounge, the space scrawled with drifting curves of paper.
"That you on the lights, Wintermute?"
A panel beside Malcolm's head slid up, revealing a small monitor. Malcolm jerked apprehensively, wiped sweat from his forehead with a foam patch on the back of a gloved hand, and swung to study the display.
"You read Japanese, man?"
Case could see figures blinking past on the screen.
"No," Case said. "Bridge is escape pod, lifeboat. Counting down, looks like it. Suit up now."
He ringed his helmet and slapped at the seals.
"What? He's taken off? Shit."
He kicked off from the bulkhead and shot through the tangle of printout.
"We gotta open this door, man."
But Malcolm could only tap the side of his helmet. Case could see his lips moving through the Lexan. He saw a bead of sweat arc out from the rainbow braided band of the purple cotton net the Zionite wore over his locks. Malcolm snatched the helmet from Case and ringed it for him smoothly, the palms of his gloves smacking the seals. Micro-LED monitors to the left of the faceplate lit as the neck ring connections closed.
"No said Japanese," Malcolm said over his suit's transceiver, "but countdown's wrong."
He tapped a particular line on the screen.
"Seals not intact. Bridge module. Launching with lock open. Armitage."
Case tried to pound on the door. The physics of zero-G sent him tumbling back through the printout.
"Corto! Don't do it. We gotta talk. We gotta..."
"Case? Read you, Case."
The voice barely resembled Armitage's now. It held a weird calm. Case stopped kicking. His helmet struck the far wall.
"I'm sorry, Case, but it has to be this way. One of us has to get out. One of us has to testify. If we all go down here, it ends here. I'll tell them, Case. I'll tell them all of it. About Girling and the others. And I'll make it, Case. I know I'll make it. To Helsinki."
There was a sudden silence. Case felt it fill his helmet like some rare gas.
"But it's so hard, Case. So goddamn hard. I'm blind."
"Corto, stop. Wait. You're blind, man. You can't fly. You'll hit the fucking trees. And they're trying to get you, Corto. I swear to God, they've left your hatch open. You'll die, and you'll never get to tell them. And I gotta get the enzyme. Name of the enzyme. The enzyme, man."
He was shouting, voice high with hysteria. Feedback shrilled out of the helmet's phone pads.
"Remember the training, Case. That's all we can do."
And then the helmet filled with a confused babble, roaring static, harmonics howling down the years from screaming fist, fragments of Russian, and then a stranger's voice, Midwestern, very young.
"We are down. Repeat. Omaha Thunder is down. We..."
"Wintermute," Case screamed. "Don't do this to me."
Tears broke from his lashes, rebounding off the faceplate in wobbling crystal droplets. Then Haniwa thudded once, shivered as if some huge soft thing had struck her hull. Case imagined the lifeboat jolting free, blown clear by explosive bolts, a second's clawing hurricane of escaping air, tearing mad Colonel Corto from his couch, from Wintermute's rendition of the final minute of Screaming Fist.
"I'm gone, man."
Malcolm looked at the monitor.
"Hatch open. Mute must override ejection failsafe."
Case tried to wipe the tears of rage from his eyes. His fingers clacked against the Lexan.
"Yacht, she tight for air, but bossman taking grapple control with bridge. Marcus Garvey still stuck."
But Case was seeing Armitage's endless fall from Freeside through vacuum colder than the steps. For some reason, he imagined him in dark Burberry, the trench coat's rich folds spread out around him like the wings of some huge bat.
Chapter 17. "Get what you went for?" the construct asked.
Quang-grade Mark 11 was filling the grid between itself and the TA ice with hypnotically intricate traceries of rainbow, lattices fine as snow crystal on a winter window. Wintermute killed Armitage, blew him out in a lifeboat with a hatch open.
"Tough shit," the flatline said. "Weren't exactly asshole buddies, were you?"
He knew how to unbond the toxin sacs.
"So Wintermute knows, too. Count on it.
I don't exactly trust Wintermute to give it to me." The construct's hideous approximation of laughter scraped Case's nerves like a dull blade.
"Maybe that means you're getting smart."
He hit the SimStim switch. 6:27:52 by the chip in her optic nerve. Case had been following her progress through Villa Straylight for over an hour, letting the endorphin analog she'd taken blot out his hangover. The pain in her leg was gone. She seemed to move through a warm bath. The brawn drone was perched on her shoulder, its tiny manipulators, like padded surgical clips, secure in the polycarbon of the modern suit. The walls here were raw steel, striped with rough brown ribbons of epoxy, where some kind of covering had been ripped away. She'd hidden from a work crew, crouching, the Fletcher cradled in her hands, her suit steel gray, while the two slender Africans and their balloon-tired work cart passed. The men had shaven heads and wore orange coveralls. One was singing softly to himself in a language Case had never heard, the tones and melody alien and haunting. The head's speech, 3 Jane's essay on Straylight, came back to him as she worked her way deeper into the maze of the place. Straylight was crazy, was craziness grown in the resin concrete they'd mixed from pulverized lunar stone, grown in welded steel and tons of knickknacks. All the bizarre impedimenta they'd shipped up the well to line their winding nest. But it wasn't a craziness he understood, not like Armitage's madness, which he now imagined he could understand. Twist a man far enough, then twist him as far back in the opposite direction, reverse and twist again. The man broke, like breaking a length of wire. And history had done that for Colonel Corto. History had already done this really messy work when Wintermute found him, sifting him out of all the war's ripe detritus, gliding into the man's flat gray field of consciousness like a water spider crossing the face of some stagnant pool, the first messages blinking across the face of a child's micro in a darkened room in a French asylum. Wintermute had built Armitage up from scratch, with Corto's memories of Screaming Fist as the foundation. But Armitage's memories wouldn't have been Corto's after a certain point. Case doubted if Armitage had recalled the betrayal, the night wings whirling down in flame. Armitage had been a sort of edited version of Corto, and when the stress of the run had reached a certain point, the Armitage mechanism had crumbled. Corto had surfaced, with his guilt and his sick fury. And now Corto Armitage was dead, a small frozen moon for Freeside. He thought of the toxin sacs. Old Ashpool was dead, too, drilled through the eye with Molly's microscopic dart, deprived of whatever expert overdose he'd mixed for himself. That was a more puzzling death. Ashpool's, the death of a mad king. And he'd killed the puppet he'd called his daughter, the one with 3 Jane's face. It seemed to Case, as he rode Molly's broadcast sensory and put through the corridors of Straylight, that he'd never really thought of anyone like Ashpool, anyone as powerful as he imagined Ashpool had been, as human. Power, in Case's world, meant corporate power. The Zaibatsus, the multinationals that shaped the course of human history, had transcended old barriers. This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.